Big show for you here today. NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah. Ever heard of him? He joins the show for Mock Draft Monday to give us his five favorite player to team fits. Man, we have so much we're getting into today. The running back who DJ loves to elevate the Chargers offense. Another running back to another AFC West team that is going to be winning you your dynasty rookie drafts from day one. And the wide receiver who is yet another perfect complement to CeeDee Lamb. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Monday, April 7th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast. And it is, oh man, it is a hell of a day to talk ball because not only is it Mock Draft Monday, but we have reeled in the biggest of all the big fish in the draft pond. It is NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah. DJ, what's going on, buddy?
I think of myself more as a goldfish, but I appreciate the kindness and the introduction there. But I'm always down to catch up with you, buddy. It's good to see you, man.
No doubt, man. It is good to see you, too. I know this is obviously your busiest time of year. We were talking about that before we got started. So I appreciate you taking the time to do this show once again. Very excited to hear who you've picked this year for Mock Draft Monday. For the new folks out there, little refresher on how this show goes. Because I say this every week when we do Mock Draft Monday, we bring on great guests. There's going to be some of their, you know, diehard fan base that comes to watch the show. That's definitely actually, I mean, that is happening, okay? Some of the Move the Sticks gang is coming over to watch this show. What we do here on this show is mock drafts. You love them. You hate them. They're part of the industry. They're part of the whole gig here. And I know that when folks like DJ put together these mock drafts, they don't love all 32 picks. You got to do it. You got to check boxes. But there are some that stick with you from a player to team fit perspective. We get the great mock drafters like DJ to come on and give us their five favorite player to team fits from their most recent mock draft. And this year, we added a segment called Stand on the Table, the prospect that you want to stand on the table for. So before we jump into this year's version, DJ, I just want to flash back to last year's five picks that you gave us. You had Joe Alt to the Tennessee Titans, Roma Dunze to the Chicago Bears, so you nailed that one. Michael Penix to the Las Vegas Raiders, Liatu Latu to the Rams, and Cooper DeJean to the Ravens. All pretty, you know, I think you got the right kind of ballparks here, but the Roma Dunze to the Chicago Bears one, I got to say, man, as a fellow Dunze guy, definitely hoping for a big year two. How do you see that situation looking this year?
I anticipate it's going to happen. I know we were both probably hoping for a little bit more production. I think there's a combination of factors last year that went into that. I think the biggest one, everybody's going to talk about Ben Johnson coming in. I'm going to talk about Keenan Allen going out. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, I think that's going to increase his targets. It's going to increase the way they use him and where he's really, really comfortable. We've talked about the different things you can do with him. I bet on him as a person as much as a player. And to me, now it's about your quarterback settling in, get Ben Johnson comfortable. But really, you look around and it's like, okay, now I don't have quite as many mouths to feed, at least, you know, as we're heading into the draft.
No, that's exactly right. To me, it isn't as much about the scheme or, you know, Caleb Williams. Obviously, he was okay for a rookie, but took a lot of sacks, had a lot of negative plays. Just any of those other rookies. And look, I liked all three of those guys. We talked about this last year. The tier one receivers to me, Adunze, Neighbors, and Harrison, you can put them in any order, and I really didn't care. It looks like, obviously, Neighbors is the clear one after year one, but none of those other guys are playing with two former Pro Bowl receivers, as you mentioned. One of them is leaving this year. I think Adunze's in for a big year, too. And I'm very curious to see where he lines up in Ben Johnson's offense. It's a guy that can play X receiver and had some good numbers
in
the slot.
I like him in the slot, man. Yeah. I wonder how many years before, like Mike Thomas will be such a distant memory, but everybody will still be referencing, oh man, just I loved his size in the slot and what he did for those Saints years, for that run that he was on there. And it's like, gosh, I could see him doing some of that type of stuff just because he's quick, he's strong, he's smart, he has a feel, like all those things to me, I'd be tempted to give him a lot of work in the slot.
Yeah, I know you and I could go down some meta receiver prospect player talks. I mean, shoot, I'm obsessed with the power slot archetype, and I've been obsessed with it basically since like the Rams took a guy in Cooper Kupp who had like the size and kind of look of an X receiver, but made him this one-of-one unique player. I think we have a couple receivers in this draft that could play that role as well, so maybe we'll talk about a few of them on this episode. Well, let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. Let's talk DJ's five favorite fits from his most recent mock draft. Hit me with your first pick here.
All right, I've got a couple that I'm tempted on here. The first one, I'm going to start all the way up there at number two, just because I just think Abdul Carter, I've been talking about this for a while with Cleveland, and pairing up with Myles Garrett, I just think that's it's just such a fun fit. And Jim Schwartz running the show there, who, you know, I spent time around a coach and was with him, and I've known him forever. And he literally, his philosophy is read is a four-letter word. So we are an attack front. We are not sitting. We are playing aggressive. We are going to focus on get off. We're going to live with a couple offside penalties because that's how much I believe in. Let's just get off the rock. And I just can't imagine. He's going to get singled. I mean, you're not getting any extra attention with Myles Garrett on the other side. I know Browns fans are like, who's playing quarterback? We can't play Kenny Pickett. I'm like, well, let's see. You know, I could see them trying to get back into the late first, or maybe they take one of these guys in the second round to add to the mix, or you know, come on down Kirk Cousins, or whatever your flavor is, Derek Carr, you want to try and make a move there. But I just from a defensive fit, it doesn't get any better than that.
Let's be honest about the Browns offense. They could do the Kirk Cousins thing. You know, it just feels like sometime during day three of the draft, when DJ is up there with Rich Eisen and the gang on NFL Network, we're going to get a news item that the Browns have fine, because they didn't take a quarterback in the first round. They took Abdul Carter, as what's happening in our scenario here. They've traded a day three draft pick to the Falcons for Kirk Cousins, who has a lot more leverage in that situation than I think people realize, even though he didn't play well last year because he's got the no trade clause. So they have him. Maybe they take a Tyler Shuck on day two, something like that. They're not going to have a good offense. Like, I don't think they're going to have one of the top 10 offenses in the league next year. So why not just make a strength stronger here and add Abdul Carter? And your games are going to be a lot closer, theoretically, DJ, if you've got these two guys screaming off the edge.
Yeah, the mountain's not going to be so high to climb offensively when you have that front keeping the score down. So I to me, it's a draft, and this draft is unique in that I don't know that there's a ton of sure things. There's a lot of ifs and maybes and a lot of hope involved with a lot of players. Like, to me, in this draft, you get a premier player, you're doing it right. So that to me is one that I absolutely loved.
If you stacked Carter, you know, with other kind of top edge players from recent drafts, where does he sort of rank out to you?
Well, I kind of go back through, you know, Nick Bosa was I think it was my first or second player in that draft. Obviously, you go Myles Garrett. Like, those guys are going to carry higher grades. The last few years, I'm trying to think of, you know, last year we did not have, you know, any super, super highly rated guys. Obviously, Verse went off and had a great year. But he would be, grade-wise, he would have been the top one last year, unless am I mistaken? Who am I missing from last year?
I mean, now Dallas Turner, like, Latu, these guys. Turner wasn't he the first defensive player drafted? And it was like,
I think
deep,
he was
deep,
like,
into the first
13,
round.
Like, yeah, we went forever with all those quarterbacks. So, yeah, he'd be the top defensive player in last year's draft for me.
All right, perfect. Let's move to your second favorite player to team fit here.
All right, this one, it was, I like it when you can kind of take stuff that's a little bit off the wall, off the radar, that hasn't been discussed, and it was just kind of kicking around different fits and different ideas. And when I put it out, trust me, because this mock is a little bit old. I don't think I have kind of a long gap between this last one, and then I think the next one might even be just the final one right before the draft. So this mock lives for a while here.
Perfect.
So
gotta get all the juice that possible out of this one.
Yeah, just let that thing live. But I got a lot of grief when I had Matthew Golden going to the Dallas Cowboys with the 12th pick. And for me, it just, first of all, they need some excitement and some juice here, and I think he can bring that. I think he's a perfect complement to CeeDee Lamb with what he can do. He can get over the top. He can create some more space. I think I've had arguments with GMs about this. Some GMs don't think he's, and you've looked at him too, so I'll get your take on it. They kind of dinged him on route running, and I'm like, I have no concerns. I don't have concerns with his route running at all. Now, there's some stuff he can clean up and polish a little bit, but I didn't see anything that was limiting in terms of, you know, of the tightness that bothered me at all. And I think he's somebody that stays, you know, feet in the ground through the catch. He's got really, really strong, reliable hands. And then on top of that, I got somebody that can really track the ball down the field and go get it. So I thought he would be a good compliment to CeeDee Lamb.
It's funny you brought him up, and obviously I didn't ask DJ for any of these beforehand. I'm actually finding them out as we're talking on the show. I thought about our conversation on last year's show about being grounded through the catch. When I was watching Matthew Golden, and I think this is the first time he's come up on a Mock Draft Monday episode, but we have had other folks put Tet McMillan with the Dallas Cowboys. Now, I think the thing with Golden that's interesting here, DJ, is like I mentioned, being grounded through the catch. My favorite route for him was probably those like deeper in cuts. Like, I don't think his speed shows up when we're talking about.
He doesn't play to the 4.29. He doesn't play to the 4.29. I 100% agree with that. But I had an argument with the GM on that particular route. I'm like, I've seen him stair step guys. I've seen him snap guys off on that. Like, I think there's some, I think there's awareness and feel. And if you want to be a little bit more precise here or there, that's all coachable. Like, I didn't see any physical limitations with him is what I was getting at.
Yeah, I got him at 80.6% success rate on dig routes, 17% of the routes that I sampled. That's a pretty good number for a college prospect. Now, he's not one of these elite top tier guys in terms of separation.
There aren't any.
Running.
No. I know we could. It's another conversation. We get to McMillan too, but like I had a text from Kurt Warner the other day because he's going through these guys as we get ready for the draft, and he was asking me about, I don't remember what one of these guys might have been, Golden, and he said, but do you see him as a one, like with like 9 question marks? Kurt likes to give a lot of of question marks or exclamation points in his text messages. And I'm like, Kurt, there's no, in my opinion, there aren't any of those premier guys. That was last year. We don't have those guys. This draft's a lot of good twos and some threes, finding guys who fit with who you are. That's why that to me, the rankings are going to be all over the map on these wideouts, because it's whatever you're looking for. There's nobody for me that's just way ahead of everybody else. It's kind of a clump there, and it's kind of like pick your flavor.
And this flavor with this particular ice cream cone here, terrible analogy, but we're going to go with it. Nice. I think works really well, DJ, because talk about this with Tet McMillan sort of helping them unlock CeeDee Lamb even further. Because I think, you know, obviously McMillan's a pure X receiver. Like, he's maybe not a number one, but I think he's a true X. Golden, though, again, some of my favorite stuff with him is when he's working off full speed motion. And they did a lot of like, I'll give Sark some credit. This offense was much more enjoyable to watch this year than it was last year. You know, maybe because we got some Arch Manning games. I don't know. But they really did a lot of that like full speed motion stuff. And I really think that Schottenheimer is going to bring more of that into this Cowboys offense. He can work in concert with CeeDee Lamb. So even if he is not a guy that I want to put out on the perimeter as much, we can bunch these guys together, stack them together, and I think create a lot of mismatches. And bottom line is, DJ, this Cowboys offense has felt very tight for probably like 2.5-3 years now. Golden at the very least is going to help open this thing up.
I've this is the other point that I've been making about the Cowboys lately, was there's the cardinal sin in sports to me. If you're a sports fan, right, if you're a fan of a team, you can be a lot of things. You cannot be bad and boring. Okay, I'll win boring. I'll have a boring team, but we win all the time. Like, that's the hello Patriots. Like, that that was probably really fun to be a Patriots fan, winning a lot of boring games. And then you have some teams that they're really exciting, but they're losing games. But you're playing young guys, and it's exciting, and it's fast, and it's fresh, and you're okay with that. Think of like the early Dan Campbell years there in Detroit, where you're like, okay, I kind of see where this is going. We're not winning games, but this is kind of fun. This is like the Dallas Cowboys are they're not a good watch. They're freaking boring as heck. And that's why I was like, I know we can say, oh, you only trade up for quarterbacks or edge rushers, but I'm like, man, their biggest needs are really wide out and corner. And Travis Hunter, if you've got a team like the Patriots that wants to get out of there, like, just do something fun, Cowboys. You haven't done anything fun since the 90s. Like, just go be aggressive and just pretend like you know, you got your dad's credit card and go do something fun.
The most we talk about him is like, well, they don't extend their stars early. That's the most interesting thing we can say about the Cowboys right now. So some juice would definitely be needed there. And yeah, Travis Hunter, to me, DJ, we haven't talked about this, but I think if he was just a pure wide receiver, he would be
good, man.
Like, he would be grouped with those guys from last year, Harrison, Adunze, and Neighbors. I mean, he would be a clear cut, what I'd call like a tier one wide receiver prospect. Golden's not that guy, but again, he could help out.
Yeah, to me, the two names that I use with Hunter when I watched him first was like Garrett Wilson, because just kind of like the silky smooth body control movement stuff reminded me a lot of Garrett Wilson when he was coming out of Ohio State. And then frame wise, obviously Devontae Smith, kind of that wiry, long, but just unbelievable ball skills. Like, you know, the catch he makes against North Dakota State where he's getting hit before and he's got to get his hands all the way out. Like, that's just, it's like, I'm good. I don't need to watch any more of this kid at receiver. He's good.
That's why I gave him the prime Odell Beckham comp, was the ball skills and the movement ability. The way he's kind of a little loose with the route sometimes. Yes. I think that can be very OBJ-esque. So
I like this. How do you chart this? Because I'm curious about this. One of the things I love about receivers, we've talked about grounded through the catch. I like guys with that run routes with personality. And it's kind of, you know it when you see it. It's hard to explain it. But there's just, I just think of the best route runners. They're literally artists in the NFL. I saw it watching Keenan Allen for all those years. You mentioned Cooper Kupp, Stephon Diggs, obviously Justin Jefferson does it. These guys are artists. So it makes it kind of interesting to chart, I would imagine, as you're going through and watching some of that.
Well, see, this is, again, something we talked about before we started recording here, is that I never want to give up the charting work myself, because to me, you can't chart that. You can't put that into a data point. But what you can do, and you know, I realize not everybody subscribes to the site, not everybody reads the profiles. They just see the charts on social media and try to get the likes and engagements by using that and all that stuff. No way, man. Like, you got to read the words. You got to listen to the podcasts, because that's where you can really kind of dive in. Like, yeah, again, that 80% on a dig route for Matthew Golden, he's not running that the same way as Travis Hunter. So like, there are just like, you're going into a gallery, you're seeing different paintings and different styles. That's what it's like watching these route runners. And that's why I do love getting to do what I do. So obviously we stuck on the receiver stuff here for a second, but give me your third favorite player to team fit.
All right, a third favorite player to team fit. I'm going to skip down here. I'm going to go to 24 to the Minnesota Vikings with Nick Amonwori, the safety who can kind of a jack of all trades for South Carolina. I like him closer to the line of scrimmage. He can be a big nickel. He could play as a nickel backer. Let him just see and sort, blitz him, do a lot of different things with him. And I just think of, first of all, the guy's, he's a height, weight, speed freak. So he's 4'3 guy at excellent size. And I just think inside your division, who do you got to go through? You got to go through Detroit. What has Detroit done over the last few years that's caused so much chaos and stress? It's they have the speed of Gibbs and Williams. Like they have some explosive pieces. So I want to match that explosiveness. I want to know that if I've got a 3rd and 7 and they decide to just pull Penei Sewell outside and run a toss at Jahmyr Gibbs, I have an interior player who can actually get to the sideline and get him. Like there's chess. He's a nice chess piece to me to combat what is the team to beat in their division.
So you're really good about this. And whenever I listen to Move the Sticks, you guys always talk about this, that you in the league, folks are focusing on, hey, look, we got to scout to win our division, right? Because I think fans on the outside here, that's like, it's 2 games of the season. Why would you ever take a guy just for those 2 games? Well,
look at last year.
Yeah, right. It gets down to December and January, and those 2 games kind of matter a lot.
They played head to head with the division on the line, and it's quite a difference between the 1 and the 5 or the 2 and the 5 seed. I mean, that's quite a big difference. Minnesota loses that game, go on the road and loses the Rams in the playoffs. So yeah, that's the fastest way to the postseason is to win your division. So absolutely teams think about that. And it's different with different divisions. Some of them, like the AFC North, it's weather related, you know, like you think about, are these the type of players we used to always say in Baltimore? Can this guy get Ben Roethlisberger down in the snow in December? Like, right. We can't bring in a 220-pound edge guy who's just a all speed kind of a feather out there on the edge. He might get to Ben Roethlisberger. He ain't gonna get him down. So you scout for your division.
And I will say, even in the rest of this division, look, like the former Lions offensive coordinator is now the head coach in Chicago. So if they're going to bring any of that offense, like they don't have the speed, obviously, that Detroit brings to the table here. But if they're going to stress you out horizontally like they did in Detroit, they might be doing that in Chicago now. Green Bay does a little bit of that as well with guys like Jaden Reed and, you know, some of the players they kind of put in full speed motion. So Amonwori could really help in that regard. Like you mentioned, he's got like multi-positional versatility. I've heard other people throw out like Kyle Hamilton comps and stuff, which feels tough. Like Hamilton's a very singular player, but in this kind of amoeba defense that they use in Minnesota, do you see like one spot that he might major in and minor in another?
The other thing that I've loved lately is I've become obsessed with guys who can win in different entry points as pass rushers. So like we think of a pass rusher, I was thinking that, you know, defensive lineman, outside linebacker, but this is a guy I think could have like 7 sacks and just let him find in different ways you can insert him in different areas of the line of scrimmage. I just think, I mean, that would be a fun toy to play with, man.
Yeah. Brian Flores is somewhere, you know, definitely getting very excited about this idea here. Sacks from a defensive back for sure. I can see it. All right, we're going to take our first break. We come back, we'll keep rolling through DJ's favorite fits right after this. All right, we're back. DJ, fourth favorite player to team fit.
All right, I'm going to go back up towards the top of the board here. And I could do this player with a lot of different spots, but Ashton Jeanty to the Raiders. Okay. I just think right now, you don't go hire Pete Carroll for 5 years from now. You go hire Pete Carroll to try and win games right now and see if you can't maybe, you know, find your way into a wild card. And it's a stacked division. It's great coaches. It's great players. It's a big challenge with Denver on the rise. I think the Chargers are on the rise, and the Chiefs are the North Star in the National Football League. But I just, to me, it matches. Ashton Jeanty is a win right now for the next 4 to 5 years, and he's going to give you a ton of production. He's going to give this offense an identity, a much needed identity. With Geno Smith, I think that's, you know, it takes some pressure off him as he comes in there year one. I also even like the fact the surface that they play on, playing indoors. I think he's going to be explosive and dynamic. He gives you no surface area to hit. And then selfishly, finally, the last reason is, I want those side by side, MJD in a Raider uniform versus Ashton Jeanty in a Raider uniform, to see those guys. That literally is who he is. That's exactly who he reminds me of as a runner.
Yeah, short, stout, breaking a lot of tackles.
There's nothing to hit.
Yeah,
he gives you no surface. You can't, like, it's funny when you're watching. Like, he's got contact balance and he's strong and he breaks. I'm like, they can't get to him. Like, there's nothing to hit. Like, it's just, it's an interesting watch.
So let me play a little bit of devil's advocate for this pick, because we've actually, he's been, this particular player to Team Fit has been brought up on Mock Draft Money before. And look, I mean, obviously I like it. They take Ashton Jeanty 6 overall and be cool with it. Do you think that actually they could potentially, the Raiders, put together a better run game if they take someone like Armon Membu, who, when I'm thinking about my non-favorite receivers in the class, it's like Jihad Campbell and Membu, because I think he's just such a riot at, you know, he could just be your right tackle. He's an ass kicker on that side. And then they take a running back on day two. Could they maybe, like, facsimile actually a better run game if they go in that direction as opposed to just taking Jeanty at 6th?
No, I think that's a fair point. I think Membu, I think, is a little bit more raw. Okay. I mean, look, in this draft, he's up there for me. I think he's like my 10th or 11th player. I just think in this draft, there are so few, like, rock solid, sure things. I know exactly what I'm buying. And this is when I was having a conversation with somebody about this the other day in the league. And I just said, it's just weird to me. Like, this year, the two tight ends and the two backs at the top of their those position groups, I feel better about than almost just about any other position. Like, I just want to come out of this draft. I've used the phrase, it's a starters, not stars draft. So, man, if I could exit the first round and have a good night's sleep, knowing I didn't just miss, that would be a good first round. And I think Ashton Jeanty is like my 3rd overall player. So that tells you how high I am on him.
Yeah, I think we got to memory wipe the premium position stuff a little bit. Like,
not this year. This is not the year for that, man.
No, this is not the year. This is a meat and potatoes, a grinder's draft. That's for sure. All right, well, curious to see which position you go with here for your 5th and your final favorite player to Team Fit.
So, and this is one that I don't think will happen. I'll preface it by saying that, but I love it. And I acknowledge fully that this team has a very big glaring weakness that needs to be addressed, and this does not do that. That being said, as someone who has waved the flag for Sam Darnold for quite some time and saw last year the breakthrough happen, minus the end of the season, I'm sitting here thinking, man, interior offensive line, a desperate need for them. No question. They need to go out and address the interior offensive line. That I'm thinking, okay, that's one way to protect Sam. Another way to protect Sam is to give him some really, really easy completions. And when you've got Smith and Jigba and you've got Cooper Kupp, who are both smart, really, really smart guys, and who can both, I think Cooper, even though he's not what he was, I still think he can win. But man, you go get Colston Loveland. Now I've got options where I can throw the ball to my backs, who I've got a nice collection of backs here. I've got those two guys who are going to, if you're going to play zone, I mean, have fun. You got Smith and Jigba and Cooper Kupp are going to eat zones alive. And then, so you're going to play more man coverage against them. And then now I've got Colston Loveland, and you got it. Who are you going to put on him? What are you going to do? And Sam can get the ball out of his hands quick and get him the rock. So I love Colston Loveland. I think he's one of the top, I think he's like my 6th or 7th player in the entire draft. He didn't have a healthy process, you know, going through the spring. So I think if people had a chance to see him move around and see how naturally he catches the ball and how easy he moves, I think he would go much higher. And he still might in this draft. But this was a Sam Darnold, let's keep hope alive pick here with Colston Loveland.
Yeah, as a founding member of the Sam Darnold oligarchy, you are definitely in the bag for making sure that Sam continues to get good things going his way. Hey, you think this has no chance to happen? I could see this being Seattle's pick in the first round.
I mean, I just, the thing is, when you have that, the interior of that offensive line just staring you right in the face, like, to me, the way, the reason I did it in this one, if you look at the mock, they're picking 18, right? At 16, I had Gray Zabel going to the Cardinals. If Gray Zabel's on the board, a guy who legit has five position flex, and you have the offensive line issues, especially along the interior there, and even you have tackles that haven't been able to stay healthy. They've been good when they've been out there, but they have not been able to stay healthy. That's such a luxury. You get a five position flex guy who can actually not just he can go out there and survive, like he's a functional tackle. I think he could be an all pro center, you know, or guard. So that to me would be tough for them to pass up if he got to him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. John Schneider, not a man lacking in confidence, and he's been confident to stare down, you know, stared into the abyss with the interior offensive line before, and he's even said, like, hey, this new coaching staff, they like some of the young guys drafted.
They get these guys going, man. Yeah. They get them up and going.
So I will say, Colson Loughlin, to me, is, I mean, what an electric player. He's super fascinating in terms of, like, doing big slot receiver stuff. In addition to, I think he actually could, you know, he played with the shoulder injury last year. Maybe he could be more of a blocker than people think once he gets the league.
He can survive.
Yeah.
He
like
can survive.
Yeah. Like just willing, you know, that's like a willing blocker, maybe not a plus blocker, but a willing blocker.
You sound like such a scout now, dude. This is just years and years of training on your part, because I can't tell you the number of times I've sat in draft rooms and we've all had tight ends that we loved. And this is not Loveland, but tight ends that we've loved that would not block a soul. We're like, but he's willing. You know, he's willing. He's fine.
I'm an excuse maker, I guess. Yeah. Well, you know, I've been doing this for 12 years now. So,
You see, you're an old vet, man.
I know.
Yeah. He'll put his face in there a little bit. Like, yeah, he's not any good at it. Like, what does that matter?
But he's giving it his best shot. The only time anybody wants to do the participation trophy in the NFL is when we get to the scouting phase.
Yeah, you get a ribbon for that.
Exactly. I will just say, too, we are getting very slot receiver heavy. If Colson Loveland, we got Cooper Kupp, who I think at this point is a slot-only player. And I will say, for the Sam Donald oligarchs like yourself, he's going to get Sam out of some trouble as Cooper Kupp. Just get that thing down to him in the flat where he's open. Like, it's fine. This really hinges on JSN being an outside receiver, which to me personally, DJ, I think he can be. He was a 75% success rate versus man prospect back at Ohio State. Even as a rookie, when he didn't have the stats, he was still over 70% in his rookie season against man coverage for me in reception perception. That gives me some faith he can be a flanker in 11 personnel. And in 12 personnel, when we go to 11, maybe he and Cooper can rotate a little bit. We just need like MVS to be the sacrificial X and stretch space out here.
Just run some people off.
And I think this team,
I haven't even really looked into it much, but I don't know how much they did it last year. But with the personnel, especially if they were to do this, wouldn't this make sense for this team to live in bunch?
Yeah, totally.
And you can dig out linebackers with these receivers. You could motion Loveland out wide, get him out all the way out, you know, give him all that room to operate, have matchups out there that you love. But to me, I just think I would be in a condensed formation a bunch with the personnel that they have.
Oh, yeah. The lines are so blurred now. I mean, when I go to my historical data, like the amount of press reps that flankers see now is just like it's coming down every single year, because you can hide these guys from, again, as long as you're not that true boundary X, you can hide these guys from press and stuff like that. And I do think JSN's good enough to do it. So I do like this pick. And I will say, from a dynasty like rookie draft perspective, Colson Loveland to the Seattle Seahawks, Colson Loveland anywhere, I think he's going to be a pretty interesting one for people to look into. We're going to take our last break. When we come back, DJ's going to give us his stand on the table prospect right after this.
My captain,
sit down, Mr. Anderson.
We have Bills Mafia here.
Let's go, Edging through the table.
All right, we're back, DJ. It's the segment that is, I mean, per sources, just tearing it up this draft season. Stand on the table, and I know. See, you've actually been in, you've been with teams. You know, you've been in front offices. You've done the whole thing. You know, this is actually a thing. People, I mean, have you ever seen anyone actually stand on the table, or is it just more of a metaphor?
Haven't seen anybody physically stand on the table. I have heard it get very heated.
Some banging on tables.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of like, what are we doing? You know, like that type stuff, you know, And then I've seen that. I've seen it get heated to the point where the two people that were having the argument at the end of the meeting went into another office and they watched tape of the two players.
Wow.
We'll sort this out.
Tape
we'll
off.
The tape. Hey, we're not going to fist the cuffs here. We're going to get the clicker. We're going to solve this like adults. So just for those two, it was, and I think it was like James Laurinaitis and it might've been Clay Matthews that year.
Wow.
And remember it was two white linebackers. Yeah. So that's my guess.
Well, very different from a hair perspective. I will say that between Laurinaitis and Clay Matthews, but yeah, I just always think of, I mean, Brad Holmes every year now, he's got like these slamming on tables. He's fist bumping after they take Jahmyr Gibbs or whatever. Soon enough, Brad's going to have to stand on the table like and really just break one of those bad boys to really just one up himself. But again, this is the prospect that DJ is willing to stand on the table for, the prospect that, you know, you just love, you're higher maybe on the consensus. This is kind of your guy-ish. And it could be at any level of the draft, DJ. So from the hundreds of players you've looked at, who do you want to stand on the table for?
I'm going to go with a first rounder, a guy who everybody for the most part that I've seen has as a late first rounder. And even talking to people in the league, especially early on the process, was he'll go high two, he'll go maybe sneaks into late one. And I've just been much higher on him throughout the whole process. And that's Jahdae Barron from Texas, who I've given my buddies in the league a hard time about it too. Cause I'm like, oh, so you guys unfairly punished Brian Branch, you know, for the position he played, and he dropped the second round. That was a huge mistake. You guys then turn around and everybody decided to do the same thing with Cooper DeJean of where are we going to play him? And I don't know. He's like, play outside. I don't know. How high do you want to take a guy? I'm like, you guys live in nickel. It's a nickel league. What are we doing? And to me, Barron plugs in there. What I love about him more than anything else, he's got the ball production. You know, he can cover. I think he could survive on the outside. Others don't, but I think he could survive. I don't think he's best out there, but I think he could. I think he could slide back and play safety if you wanted to. I think he'd do everything. But the thing that I love him more than anything else, the guy does not miss tackles. He is unbelievably reliable. And in a league right now where they're trying to isolate guys there and they're going to force that player at that position to make tackles, having a guy with an extremely high batting average that I can completely trust, and oh, by the way, I can also blitz him and do other things with him from that regard. I don't get it. I just absolutely don't get it. He's one of my top, I think, 12 players in the draft. And he probably, in the way the league works, it probably will happen. He'll end up in the 20s, you know, mid to late 20s when it's all said and done. And I'll be sitting there on the desk going, we're going to be watching this guy take the ball away next year. We're going to be watching him, you know, make key plays. You're going to watch him sack the quarterback. It was Cooper DeJean. I saw him pick six in the Super Bowl. Ho-hum, no big deal. Maybe we should have taken him in the first round, hindsight. So that's my guy this year.
Yeah, maybe the, you know, overreaction to the, hey, how do we become this year's Eagles? Maybe that boosts Barron up. But it's such a good point, DJ, that like the league has changed, man. It's like we were just talking about the receiver position. You know, we get to this time of the year in draft prospects like, he's a slot-only guy, or maybe he has to live in slot. Who cares? Everybody's living in 11 personnel.
What are we talking about?
Amon-Ra St. Brown, one of the best receivers in the league. He's a slot guy. Like, and
do you know how many people? You know how many people in the league poo-pooed that contract? By the way,
really?
Like, how do you give a slot receiver that much money? I'm like, well, I don't know. He catches 100 balls a year, scores double-digit touchdowns. Like, I really don't care where you line him up. Like, I think the touchdowns count the same, whether they come from the slot or whether they come from the outside.
Especially when your quarterback needs that like binky receiver as well. So, yeah, man. I mean, so for Barron, it just makes so much sense because you need someone to defend those guys. It's a league that's the run game is back. I mean, not that it ever went away, but being tough and physical, you need somebody to tackle those guys. You're trying to stretch people horizontally in the pass game. This is the type of guy, it sounds like, who could potentially be big in defending both of those areas.
Yeah, to me, I just think it's such a weapon, man. The other one I would say, if I could get a bonus one, so this would be my, I'll major in Barron, I'll minor in Henderson with Travion Henderson from Ohio State. Just for the mere fact of, I don't know if I've ever had more fun watch a running back pass protect than I did with him. Like, he's a killer back there, man. And he's obviously an explosive home run hitter, can catch the ball, run routes, all that stuff. But put all that to the side, his pass protection stuff this year is as much fun on tape as you'll see.
Okay, I was trying to be respectful of your time here, DJ, but you are good enough to come on a fantasy show and then end it with, I call the show like a fantasy adjacent show, but a fantasy adjacent show and give us this running back here right towards the end. And, you know, obviously I love that you highlighted the pass protection because, hey, your favorite rookie back what's banged him previously. It's that he can't pass protect. This guy can. Yeah. You see it all over the film. Give me like a dream landing spot for Travion Henderson.
I do call Charger games.
There you go.
He is the perfect complement to what, you know, they brought in Najee to kind of be their hammer. But I thought with that team last year, watching them, they need to get more dynamic and more explosive. Mm-hmm. So Najee kind of reinforces kind of what you have, but you needed somebody that's more dynamic. And I just think of, man, him out there, and you have, Herbert knowing that that's the last line of defense. I can either get this guy out in the route, pitch him the ball, and he can make me look good, like Austin Eckler did, you know. Yeah. for his years there. So he's that type of player as a receiver and pass catcher. But then also, hey, I want to take a shot. I need to let this thing develop a little bit with Ladd McConkey down the field, and we want to go for a home run. I keep this dude in, and I don't even worry about it. He'll be fine.
Yeah, they need a little bit of like a little bit of what Austin Eckler used to give them, you know, like the little check down option, stuff like that. Because all their receivers, I mean, Ladd gets stereotyped as like a little white slot receiver, kind of the pop gun target. But now that guy's running like intermediate routes. Yeah. Like, so yeah. You want him out there. Therefore, let's get a check down option here. Henderson would be a great fit, and I agree with you. Like, you got your grinder, Najee Harris. Let's get that home run threat who could be like more of your feature back, or at least like your true 1A in year two, because it's only a 1-year deal for Najee Harris. If not,
I don't know how they would do it. I don't know how the Chargers would do it. They'd have to move back and kind of move around the board a little bit in terms of where these players are likely to go. But if you told me like the two fits is someone who's called their games, you give me Travion Henderson, and then you go ahead and you give me Mason Taylor, and you're cooking with gas.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. That's what they need. They definitely are in need of some playmakers there. They got one guy. They got a star in Ladd McConkey. Yeah. Let's get a few other plays. I've never seen a box score like that in my entire life, DJ, like that wild card game where it's 190 plus to one player and what, like sub 20 to everybody else. So we need
the more bizarre number from that. Look at the targets for Will Dissly in that game. That's the other one. That was like the moment where it was kind of like the epiphany of like, Will Dissly's been a great blocker in this league for a long time. Had a productive year, but like, you can't funnel that many balls to him in a playoff game. Like, they got to get some more guys.
I love it. All right, DJ, appreciate you for doing this. This is normally where I would, you know, have the guests say like, hey, promote your stuff. And I do want you to do that, but I feel like everybody knows Move the Sticks, NFL Network. You're going to be on the draft table with the Rich and the guys there. But again, promote your stuff here, DJ.
Well, I would just add to that. We've got a new podcast we're doing. I'm doing with Rosenthal, which is called 40s and Free Agents, which is just
it's good. I've listened.
Limited run. I think we're doing 10 episodes. I mean, and to be honest, it's 40s and Free Agents. He's the free agents. I'm the 40s. I'm kind of the draft. He's kind of the free agency. We did 2 episodes on free agency, 8 on the draft. I think that's probably pretty relative to what Greg brings to the show. But, you know, it is that. I mean, I've got a lot of feedback. A lot of people have enjoyed, you know, most of it. Most of the criticism tends to be towards Greg. Neither here nor there. I just give it a chance. You know, give it a shot. Maybe you don't hate him. You know, maybe you're part of that select few that listen to him and go, tolerable.
Greg is a friend of the show. So I'm going to allow DJ to take all the shots and just laugh along. But no, it is a great show. I've listened to a few of the episodes. You guys are crushing it. You're crushing it as always, DJ. Can't wait to watch what you guys have coming up the rest of draft season, because it's going to be fantastic. That is going to do it for today's show. But Tuesday, we will be back. Yahoo Sports own Frank Schwab is going to join the show to continue our teams that will shape the draft series. Teams that are one-ish right pick away from contending. We might actually be talking more about those Los Angeles Chargers. Until then, we are out.